Luther will attack this whole practice. 2 years after 1519, it gets abolished in Wittenberg. It looks like, for Luther, like a kind of magic that you pay for, to pay for spiritual favors. And that's, you get the sort of sense of the Reformation critique of Catholicism at this point. We'll deepen that as we go. Let me mention another kind of clergy, monks and friars, people in monasteries. They're not necessarily priests. Lots of monks and friars are not priests. They're called regular clergy because they live under a monastic rule, an official rule, which in Latin is called a regula. So regular means ruled. They live under a regula, an official rule that governs their lives, that sets them apart from other people, just like priests in that regard. They're set apart. In fact, they're more set apart than regular priests. Parish priests are called secular clergy because they live in the world with other people. The regular clergy live separate lives, bound by these separate and special rules, which include always all the rules, whether they're Augustinian or Franciscan or Benedictine, include vows of poverty, obedience, and chastity, those three vows. And then they'll be fleshed out in different ways by the Benedictine monastic rule, the Franciscan rule for the friars of St. Francis of Assisi, the Augustinian rule for people who are called monks or friars. Luther, it turns out, is an Augustinian. You never know whether to call him a monk or a friar, because Franciscans, you know, are friars. Benedictines, you know, are monks. Augustinians can be monks or friars, and Luther called himself both. Doesn't matter too much. The important thing to know about Luther is that he's also a priest as well as a monk and a friar. So he's at the center of all this clergy business. And he also, as a monk or a friar, takes this vow of poverty, chastity, and obedience. That separates him from the world, because poverty means he's not supposed to own any property. That separates him from the economic life of society. Chastity separates him, of course, from the domestic life, the family life of society. And obedience means his primary obedience belongs to his monastic superior, the abbot of his monastery, or whoever is sort of in charge of him. And there's always someone in charge of you if you're a monk or a friar. And that means that your primary obedience is not to the local political authorities. The political authorities sometimes don't like this. So there's this separation of the clergy from the laity that is profound in the Middle Ages, a massive and important thing. Now, one more thing about monks. Individual monks are vowed to poverty, but monasteries themselves, the settings in which monks live, can be very, very wealthy and powerful institutions. When William the Conqueror took over England in 1066, the monasteries owned somewhere around a sixth of the landed wealth of England. That's a lot of power and wealth, right? There's this real mixture of spiritual power and political power in the Middle Ages. At the end of the Middle Ages, King Henry VIII, who inaugurated the English Reformation, dissolved the monasteries. He got rid of them, and he collected a large amount of wealth as a result. So the Reformation had economic consequences, and how. Now, that leads me to the next point. You see, medieval clergy, with this spiritual power, also had temporal power. Spiritual power and temporal power were intertwined. Temporal power means political power, basically, but also economic power. Temporal contrasts with eternity. Temporal has to do with time. Spiritual power has to do with eternity because it's about eternal life. Temporal power has to do with life in this world, the earthly life, this transitory mortal life. That's why it's called temporal, but it's also political power. Clergy had political power, especially the bishops. Let me talk about bishops. All bishops are priests. They supervise other priests and other churches, and typically they hold a benefice. This is a really crucial social and economic notion in the Middle Ages. A benefice is like an ecclesiastical fief, a church fief. You know how fiefs work in the feudal system. The king grants land to a nobleman who then owes the king military service in payment for this fief, which is landed wealth, which means that they own a bunch of serfs who are bound to the land. So a fief is both economic and political power, in return for which the nobleman owes his lord military service. Well, likewise, a bishop gets a fief called a benefice, which means typically land, the peasants who belong on the land, the produce of the land, the wealth of the land. And in return, they offer to the sovereign or the local lord spiritual services.